You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, I'm Steven.
And I'm Brett.
And we are the Broadway Husbands.
This is episode 18 of our podcast, and we have a lovely couple, Michael Kushner and Remy Germanario, I'm saying that right, correct?
Yeah, just put a little Italian spin on it. Germanario. Yeah, there you go. There you go. Hi. Thanks for having us.
We're so glad you guys are here. Where are you quarantined at and what's happening?
Well, first of all, I just want to say I'm so happy that, you know, we're the 18th episode. We're making you officially legal.
Think about that.
I was worried about that before, but now I feel okay about it.
Now we
can do whatever we want. We're like fair game.
Okay. Yeah, just had to wait until they got to college, huh? We're sitting in our apartment. Very lucky because you know, we've lived together for now almost 5 years. We moved in with each other about a year after we started dating.
Which was very shocking for me because I'm a commitment phobe.
Yeah. Oh. And he's also like the Gemini-est of Geminis. And I'm also the Canceriest of Cancer.
Can you put an Italian spin on that, Gemini-est?
Gemini. So the joke about being a Gemini is that it's like you're dating two of them,
which is incorrect.
Elaborate.
Is it just because they have like extreme sides? Is that what Gemini? Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So first of all, I'm just going to go out on a limb, and this might be polarizing to many listeners, but Gemini is the best sign, in my opinion. Because I'm just kidding. So people think we're two-faced, but actually we just have like very contrasting personality disorders. I'm also having started my coffee, personality traits, that can seem very, very extreme. So like, for example,
can seem very, very extreme.
So like, for example, like I I can be very extroverted and I can go to parties or events and I can be bubbly and social and great. But on the very opposite extreme of that, I'm also like an extreme homebody with social anxiety. Do you know what I mean? So with us moving in together, we've been very lucky to be quarantining together and our home that we've made. So it's been nice, like we've been reorganizing and cleaning and everything like that. So like when we moved in together after like 11 months, that was just strange for me because Geminis are very independent. And we like our time and our alone time, and we can and do thrive alone. So that was a very unique thing for me to move in only after like 11 months.
The artist in me just like started singing in my head two songs that you said. You said our time and then you said alone. And I just went off in my own little tangent. Yeah. And it's our time. Breathe it in from Marilyn. Okay, good.
Yeah.
This is Broadway Husband. So.
What are your signs?
Steven.
I'm a Scorpio.
Oof, watch out.
Nice.
Which is probably like has a similar reputation as I would think a Gemini.
Because there's that thing where if like a Scorpio, and Steven's very much like this, like, super fine, super cool, kind of doing his own thing. But if you fuck with him, that stinger comes out and that's it. Like one time is all you get. And once you've messed up, like,
well, yeah, but the done. One time that you mess up, it's got to be pretty major, and that's then true. I'm like, okay, I think this might be done.
But the answer can be very biting.
I feel as a Cancer, I really like, I get along with Scorpios because Cancers are very loyal. We're very loyal and sensitive and emotional. I mean, the way that you could picture Remy and I together is if Monica Geller dated Joey from Friends, because she's, you know, Monica Geller is very, you know, she type A, she's very, you know,
let's say, on the other end of that energetic spectrum, I'm also a Lisa Kudrow and Phoebe, and I can also be very chill and easygoing.
He likes to the thing about that is you try so hard on a Monica Geller level to be relaxing Phoebe. And Phoebe.
That's hilarious.
I disagree. I feel like, look, Monica gets the bad rep on Friends, and I think that she is the most put together one.
Whenever we go on vacation, you're always like, I hope I'm relaxing enough. I hope I'm enjoying it enough.
But I actually am.
That's so Monica Geller of you.
Yeah, but I'm also like, I also can be like really chill, and I digress. What were you going to say?
Yes, you can be really chill. You should call
this podcast Broadway Bickering.
Well, I'm a Taurus.
Oh.
So, yeah. So, I'm very stubborn. I have, like, things I need to accomplish, and I'm going to, like, you know, bull through it to get it done.
And also, so when we go on vacation, he doesn't even say, hey, we're going to relax. We're going to have fun. We just go until he actually gets tired, and then I get what I want.
That's actually very
wait, I don't understand. Say that again.
So like if we go away, like you know, the most recently we went to Orlando, and the first half of the week was spent going to Universal and Disney. And not that I don't enjoy that also, but you know, we literally got there at 8 a.m. and we're in Universal before 10 a.m. And then we spent every day in a theme park until we basically were worn out. And then once we were worn out, then we got to go to Key West and relax.
That vacation,
so I just have to go with the flow. Then. Yeah, it was fun.
You guys go to Disney a lot, don't you?
Not as often as I'd like to.
That's the same with Michael. Our most recent vacation, well, we were going to go on two other ones, but COVID also in Orlando at Disney, and this one wore me out.
Yeah.
We did the Disney.
When I do Disney, I do Disney. You know, I grew up in Fort Lauderdale. Remy's from Tampa, and I was a pass holder, so I used to go once a month growing up, so...
So lucky. Nice.
Yeah. And you know, it's really interesting. Like last night, you know, I couldn't sleep very well, and I
took a Salmonex.
and I was watching on YouTube, you know, just like the Haunted Mansion on low light. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because, you know, I'm not like we don't have like Disney decor, you know, and like no shit.
We do. But we're looking at it right now.
No. Like I'm talking about like how like people really like go in and like design like with the Disney theme. And,
oh
like,
yeah, we're not like extreme. We have a couple Disney.
And that's cool if you do. I mean, I've seen some really cool stuff. We don't have that, but I do have a really deep relationship with Disney because I grew up going there, and you know, I was just talking with I can't remember if it was Tanya Pinkins or if it was Al Silber on my podcast, but about childlike wonder and about being able to discover and being able to use your mind and your imagination, and that's what Disney is all about. So I would memorize those parks. I know how to get through those parks, beat the crowds to get, like, you know, it's so funny. Remy hates when I do this, but at the Haunted Mansion, when you're waiting in line, they literally say fill in all dead space. And and Remy thinks that's cutting, but really they tell you to fill in all space and you can jump.
I know it's not cutting.
200 people.
I just hate confrontation.
It's not confrontation. I just want to see Madame Leota a little sooner.
Well, so tell us. Who you guys are and what you do.
Yeah, separately before you met.
We always like to let our guests tell our listeners a little bit about them instead of us trying to do it. So
yeah. Do you want me
to tell us who you are, what you do?
I guess I'll go first. Who I am, what I do. I'm Remy.
Hi, Remy.
Hi.
Like Ratatouille.
Yes, that's who I was named after. Back to Disney for just 1 second, and then I'll tell you about me. So growing up, I'm from Trampa Bay, and I would go to Disney a lot as well. And I always felt so like left out and weird because my name was so weird, especially back then, that they never had my name on any of the souvenirs at the gift shop. Mm-hmm. And then when Ratatouille came out, my name was there, and I felt so seen. And
they're building the attraction now for Epcot.
Oh, they are? Yes, we saw the little the design for it at the little pavilion in Epcot.
You'll get to see yourself.
Yeah,
I can't wait. Can't wait. I'm Remy. I'm an actor. I'm a stand-up comedian. I'm a sketch comedian on Mod Night at UCB. And yeah, that's me. What else should I say?
That's good. And now
I want to hear about how you guys met, but yeah. Like, let's hear about Michael. Tell us who you are and what you do.
Tell us quickly, yeah.
Hi, I'm Michael. I'm a multi-hyphenate actor, photographer, producer, writer. I produce non-quotidian artistry that benefits the world around me. And I went to Ithaca College, graduated in 2013, did a few gigs, got my card, moved to the city as what I thought would be just as an actor. But ultimately followed my heart and impulses and my little artist BBs and went on a huge journey and continue to do so today and tomorrow.
That was so eloquent. And here I am being like, what do I say?
Well, I literally teach workshops
on this.
On that.
And again,
You should take it.
Here's the deal. I'm a stand-up comedian, and at stand-up's cores, we're self-deprecating. And so I feel like the multi-hyphenate workshop would go against my brand.
Word.
Yeah.
Hey, by the way, we watched last night Dave Chappelle's Mark Twain award ceremony.
How was it?
It's on Netflix. You have to watch it. He's
amazing.
I mean, you know, he's polarizing, I think.
Yeah, he's been so controversial with his sets.
Super polarizing.
Especially within the gay community, he's very polarizing. But, yeah. You know, it was very funny. We think he's hilarious.
I think he's hilarious.
I'm very strange. Like, with stand-up, you're supposed to, like, watch everyone and know everyone and, like, you know, people. You know, every stand-up refers to, like, the big ones, like, by their last name. Be like, oh, yeah, did you see that Chappelle show last night? Oh, yeah, I saw Schumer the other day. And, you know, oh, my inspiration is Dangerfield and Rickles. And, you know, I'm like, so bad with that, though, because I very rarely will watch straight male comedians. Yeah. I never... I don't know what it is. I mean, I like... I don't know. Well, I just am so drawn to, like, women and, like, LGBTQ community, and I don't know. I'm not saying that straight male comedians aren't great. It's just I don't know.
Well, they're not. I've seen many of your shows, and the lulls are usually the straight white men because they are the only people in the room that don't talk on their experience. But they talk on everyone else's.
But thankfully, like, being in the stand-up community, especially the local New York City one, there are a bunch of people who I know, at least in my little circle, who do that and do it well and aren't that typical. And those are the people I love in terms of the straight male community.
What I find fascinating with Dave Chappelle is, and we can change the subject of this, is his way of telling, his recipe for a joke is really good. Like, he knows how to build it, and it's really interesting to watch him do it. Even if it's offensive and it's totally wrong, you're just like, holy crap, the way he built into that is amazing. And the fact that he got that reaction from the audience, and he knows he's offending people, and he knows it, like, it's really interesting to watch. But comedy, you know,
well, comedy is a recipe. Comedy is music, you know.
Yeah, it's an art form.
Well, and speaking of, you know, knowing that you're offending people, and that's like what makes it so funny. Mel Brooks, you know, you know, Springtime for Hitler, and he uses the N-word in Blazing Saddles, right?
Yeah, he does. And
you know, Clavon is Clavon Little, is that his name, who is the lead in Blazing Saddles? Oh, I could be so wrong. But you know, being in,
well, Dave Chappelle is in Robin Hood Men in Tights.
Yeah,
right. That's true.
Oh, that's right. He is, isn't mm-hmm. he?
But you know, being in on the joke with Mel Brooks is what makes it work. So yeah, Clavon Little is the lead in Blazing Saddles, and being in on the joke is what makes Mel Brooks the library of Mel Brooks stay open, because you know, with Springtime for Hitler, he was like, the only way that we could take him down is to laugh at him.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's how Springtime for Hitler came about. And that's how it still gets, that's how it's not dated, because the why, and this is what I talk about in a lot of things, what I do, what Remy does, what everyone as an artist should do, is have a why, the why of it all. And ultimately, the why of Springtime for Hitler is so crystal clear that it's impenetrable.
Great drag name.
Crystal clear?
Oh,
that's good.
Oh, that is good.
That's a good one.
Well, and like,
wait,
and also,
so,
like,
wait, I want to just veer off of this because I want to talk about you guys for a minute.
Sorry, we're all about tangents. Sorry.
Where did you, so you both came to New York, not necessarily like, Michael, you said you came to be an actor, and Remy, was your goal to be a stand-up comedian, or were you coming to New York to pursue career in musical theater?
Not even. My trajectory has changed so much, and kind of semi-recently. So I moved to New York in 2008. So September will be 12 years, which is insane. So I went to college here. I went to NYU. And I started out, you know, being the typical, I want to do musical theater and I want to be on Broadway. And, you know, I still want to do that. But I, you know, I graduated.
If it comes back, I'm kidding.
So, yeah, I know. Right. Who knows? but I graduated, and I've been very grateful, especially when I graduated in 2012, like I worked, you know, I was doing what I loved, but I found it difficult to like get that next break to like get me to like a next level. And I was kind of plateauing, you know, for a while working, but not getting to that next level I wanted to. And the long story short of it is that I very serendipitously in 2015 got signed with a great agency in, I started with them in LA, and then I came back and I was doing Bicoastal, you know, here. And because of that, I got a manager from it, and I got signed with the commercial department and the voiceover department. And it was a great agency. And I had that naive thought that I was like, oh, a great agency is going to be the thing that gets me to where I want to be. And a great agency can, of course, help that. But in my opinion, I think it's naive that you to place all of your trust in an agent. You know, you do have to take more agency for yourself. But after a year, they were, you know, they were lovely, but I wasn't getting that many auditions, and the higher ups told all the agents to drop people who weren't really getting auditions, and I was one of them. So like after a year, they dropped me, and it was such a bummer, just because it all came together so harmoniously and serendipitously. Like I thought that was going to be the thing, and it's many times never the thing. You know, the universe is not going to stop telling you that it's not going to stop giving you opportunities. But I was really depressed from it. And people had always told me that I should try stand-up comedy. Like I was one of those people that would post funny Facebook statuses all the time. And in musicals and plays, I was usually the comedic relief. And, you know, that it just came naturally to me, just being funny. I never thought of stand-up, though, because I'm not a big writer. Like writing my own stuff never appealed to me. But a couple of days after that agency dropped me, my friend Kevin Hurley, a very funny straight
male. I was going to bring him up as an example. He's a funny straight guy.
Yeah, he's awesome. He runs a comedy collective, I suppose you could say, called the Comedy Mob. They do shows and great open mics. Most open mics are terrible, but they have a wonderful one. It feels more like a show rather than one. It's a great place for established comedians, newer comedians to come together and try out new material. And he was like, hey, you've been, you know, we've talked about stand-up before. You should come and try it at my mic. And it just seemed weird that like 2 days after this agency dropped me and I was depressed about like my musical career and acting and everything, that happened. So I was like, screw it, let's try it. And I got into it, and it went well, and I kept pursuing it, and for a while I focused more on that than I did acting. But then that inspired other acting gigs. So like when I started doing stand-up, I got cast in a few productions over a few years of Buyer and Seller, which is a one-man show that's pretty much a stand-up comedy special for an hour and 45 minutes. So like that helped inform the other. And then I started getting into sketch, and I got cast on the House sketch team at UCB. So that helps inform acting and comedy. And again, like Michael said, cross-pollinating, like all of these things combined together. So comedy didn't seem like a thing, but I'm glad that it is now part of my arsenal.
Yeah. Well, so were you both, how long have you been together along that path? When did you meet? Were you auditioning together? Tell us about that.
Yeah. Michael tells the story.
So we met at a Book of Mormon EPA.
we didn't book.
We didn't book, but we booked a boyfriend.
Hey. We booked, honey.
And I asked him to date me 3 times, and he said no each time.
And here's what my response is to that. I didn't say no. He did the thing where he's like, hey, we should hang out, or hey, we should get a cup of coffee. And I did that thing, when you're like, yeah, sure, we should. But like, you never like really plan to, like you just say yes to like, but like just with anyone, boyfriends or friends, people. But anyway, that's what I did. I didn't say no.
Uh-huh. So then we had our first date, which you were an hour late to.
Mm-hmm. But now I'm never late.
No, that's the thing. It's like, he actually is.
That was a fluke.
That was like your thing. And
Gemini.
And, yeah.
I know.
Yeah,
it was polar opposite.
And that was a total fluke. Like, I forgave him for that. Like, it was like a scene out of a movie. Like, the waiter was like, do you want a glass of wine on the house? He's like, no, he's like gonna show up. Like, and it was just like, it was literally from a movie. But and then we had a lot of fun. And what's actually funny was we both had our For Now jobs at the time, and I was working at a store called Saban, which is an Israeli skincare store, and it was
totally
the Soho. Yeah, free soap samples that we were told to literally, like, basically chase people down the street to give them.
Well, they do.
It was insane. It was like
throw them at you.
When we were trained to work there, it was insane, because what they would do is they would be like, so what you're going to do is you're going to take a basket for them. You're going to ask them what they are looking for. And then you're going to just start putting stuff in the basket for them as they're talking to you. And you're going to hand the basket to them and then lead them to the cashier. And it worked every single time. But what's amazing was, I'm so happy I worked in retail, because I learned so much about how to build a business and how to talk to a client and how to like get what you actually need out of someone. It was an experience, and I did it for about a year, washing people's hands. Remy was a tour guide and a damn good one, and we just on that date I brought him to the store and washed his hands and like introduced him to like my coworkers he had an allergic reaction, because some of that shit is strong sometimes. And then he gave me a tour of Soho, like, because he has, he's a tour guide, so, and he has a Soho tour.
And what was funny is that it was very reluctant, because the reason I was late is because, get ready, I had just given a 9-hour tour. Yes, it's like a comprehensive New York City in a day tour.
I've done that. I have my tour guide license.
Wait, you do?
Yeah.
Did you work for a company ever?
I freelance for several companies.
Cool.
But I did those 9-hour bus, getting all over Manhattan.
Oh, you were lucky you were on a bus. Mine was walking.
Oh.
I know. I had amazing cabs though. No, but I had just given a 9-hour tour where the last stop was Soho, Little Italy, and Chinatown. So the reason I was late is because I finished the tour at Soho, Little Italy, and Chinatown. I had to run up to my apartment in Harlem, shower, and then come back down to Soho where our date was. And then I had after dinner and my soap experience, and then Michael wanted me to give him the same tour I had just given for 9 hours.
But yeah. The thing is I didn't know that, and it's all about communication. And if I had known that you
told
were...
told you.
I don't think so. I wouldn't have
Look,
been like...
He showered for you, Michael, and it made the whole night worthwhile.
And it's because he smelled good that night, and he always smells good. So
Aww.
It's true. You never smell bad, which is amazing.
Monica Geller.
It's like you're always so... You're so clean, and you're so like... All, you're always put together, even when you're like quote unquote roughing it. You're always like nice to look at, and like
too,
to like. Ugh, no, that's a lie. But but you no. Somehow you like always are so pretty and clean.
Aww.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater. SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
So how long has it been since that date, since the Soho hoedown?
May will be six years.
Yeah.
Yay. The big six.
Yeah.
Last year for our 5 year, you know, it's a milestone. We went back to the restaurant. We had our first date in Soho because we haven't been back since our first date.
Yeah. It was fun.
And was it as magical the second time as the first?
Honestly, I love that restaurant.
It was nice. What was funny is that we...
Should we plug it? What's the restaurant?
What was it called? Il Caraglio, which is in Soho. It's on Prince Street.
Mm. Well, maybe they're doing takeout right now.
What was funny is that we were planning on like making like a... It was a beautiful night out. We were going to go do that. We were going to walk around, get dessert. We were just going to like walk around the city and like enjoy the night. But true to form, we were just like, do you just want to get like massages and then go home?
Yeah.
So that's what we did.
That sounds so nice.
Yeah. How long have you guys been together?
Well,
actually,
on Saturday. Is that right? On Saturday will be our 9-year wedding
anniversary. Wow. Mazel tov.
Thank you. And excited. This year, the 9-year wedding gift is leather.
Okay, daddy.
Wait, is that tradition? Is that tradition, or is
that's
that
the modern?
That's the modern.
Tradition is what? Copper? What was it?
I feel like they said copper, but I feel like we already got each other copper things.
I forget what. Wow. It said something. It was something
what you
really
do on your own time is.
Yeah, I don't necessarily condone that sort of behavior, but.
You guys be safe, okay?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Obviously kidding.
Have a safe word. And
Safe word is Broadway Podcast Network.
So you both now, so you're doing the stand-up, Remy, and the sketch and the improv. And Michael, you do amazing headshot photography plus all your hyphenates acting and producing and... But with the headshots, like, I'm curious about your apartment, because we only had this moment when the quarantine started where Steven's teaching ballet in our living room and we would have to move our dining room table. It was a whole thing, like 2 times a day. Like,
you didn't have to do it. I did it.
I know, but it's our apartment. We would have
you
to
weren't a part of it.
Make the space. Is it challenging to make your living space your workspace, and how do you create boundaries for each other with that?
So I'm going to. Okay. So space is very, very. Brett, you've seen the apartment before. Space is very, very important to us. When we moved into our current apartment, we had moved from a 6-floor walk up, where I was doing headshot, photography. I had Rachel York come up those 6 flights of stairs and get her pictures done there. And it was, about half the size of our current apartment. And, when Remy and I moved in to this new place, it was very important that we reflect the space. We make the space to reflect how we felt in our life in that moment. And that was more adulty than our previous space. So the colors are a lot richer, and it's a little more like as if we're, it's designed as, it's actually modeled after Patti LuPone's house. Because it's like,
it is?
Yeah, the color. I told you that like 6 times.
Okay, hashtag Broadway bickering. Keep going.
But you don't have her basement. So
I certainly don't have the basement, but I've slept in the basement. It's actually not a basement. It's a separate.
It doesn't matter.
That's the basement, but where she has like the cool stuff, like the Tonys and some of the dresses, is like in a separate space, and it's amazing. But
the thing about Michael's studio is,
we have
a 2-bedroom. So the second quote unquote bedroom is his studio. So and that's just like his space. I don't do anything with it. You know, he pays more in the rent, and you know, and we. You know, that he keeps his clients and everything in there. And then the common space in the bedroom and the kitchen is ours, and the studio's for clients. You know, he has chairs set up in there. So, you know, his photography stuff just stays within the studio. So the rest of it is a home, but it's worked out great for him, for me. And
being in quarantine has been really, you know, good for our space, because we've, you know, deep cleaned and we've organized and stuff. But ultimately, like, I love, I grew up doing this. I love revisiting spaces and seeing how they can look and how they can change and what they can, the different stories or ambiances that they can tell. And so I grew up changing furniture in my house or wherever I was living, helping my grandma do it. Like, we would change furniture every month or so. And, you know, grew up looking at, you know, shabby chic designs, and so, you know, we kind of rearranged a little bit and made the space a little more accessible, and that was really fun. But ultimately, it's been good to collaborate on that effort, and that, and my studio also serves as a really great space when I'm like, I just need a second to myself.
To be on your own, yeah.
You know what I mean? I think a safe room is really important for any couple. Doesn't matter how great you are, how not great you are together. It's just a space to be able to be like, I just need an hour to chill out and have silence. And that's when the studio is really helpful as well right now.
Totally.
Yeah, that's helpful for us right now. We're in Pittsburgh, so we're in a house, a 4-bedroom house, so there's plenty of room for that.
It's nice. We don't get that in the East Village.
We don't get that in the East Village in Manhattan. But
You don't have a 4-bedroom in the East Village? That's strange.
Not yet. Not yet. We're working on it.
Yeah, we're working on something like that too. We, you know, we have goals, something that's very exciting for us, and keeps us, you know, keeps the passion really alive and the focus really alive, are the goals that we set for ourselves in a relationship. And one of our main goal right now is the living spaces that we dream of, you know, Remy wants.
Like a house in the country, upstate. I desperately need that, just because, like, like I said, I've lived in New York for 12 years, you know, almost, and like, I love New York, don't get me wrong. And, you know, when I first moved here, like, everything was magical. And, like, it was, you know, I was so energetically in line with New York. And again, I still love New York, and there's still those moments where it'll be magical. But New York is wearing on me a little bit. It's, like, exhausting me. And I find myself more often than not more annoyed with the things that come with New York, the people, the crowds, you know, people standing in the middle of the sidewalk or at the top of the subway stairs, or you know what I mean? And so like, for me, I think to kind of rekindle that relationship with a city that I've lived in for over a decade, I want a little escape so I can kind of be in both places, and I can kind of, when I need to get away, I can get away, and then I'll crave to be back.
Yeah.
Yep.
We're with you. Yeah, I mean, I Stephen moved to New York when he was 12.
So really? Just 4 years. Yeah, just a couple years
four
ago.
Years, 4 years ago. The podcast is legal, but you aren't.
That's right.
And I moved to New York in 99. So we both went through this, that moment of, you know, as much as we love New York, you have to find a balance, because the city will take that energy out of you. And no time has felt more... That felt more important than this time, where it's like, wow, you know, the city is so intense right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
like, yeah, this would have been a great time to quarantine in a country house, you know?
Well, that's, you know, I was so jealous of my friends at Wicked who all had their country homes, who'd been at Wicked for 10 years so they could buy their homes.
Right.
You know, and I've been there 4 months. So like, okay. So go ahead.
No, I'm saying just give it a second and you'll get it.
Yeah, I'll be patient. even though I'm a Taurus and I'm not that patient. Anyway,
it's not patient.
Okay, we want to ask you guys. So we have a section that we do every podcast, a segment that we call Spotlight on Love. Yeah. And we have, you know, somebody from our Instagram account or someone who's a listener, send us some sort of relationship question or advice that they would like. And then we have our guests or us, and we all kind of chime in and give our response to that. So Stephen has the question. Do you want to?
Yeah, it is.
It's from somebody who wrote to us on Instagram, who is staying anonymous.
It says, do you consider yourself masculine or feminine in your relationship? Mm. And do traditional gender roles play a part in your relationship, I guess, is what it means.
Sure. Shall we begin?
Yes, let's hear it.
So no, I think that it's a very common, and I'm personally not offended by that, but I think it's a very common like stereotype of gay men, like, you know, one is the masculine, one is the feminine, you know, tops and bottoms, dominant and submissive. And and maybe sometimes that's a thing with people. I think everyone has their own dynamic, but I don't think that that means anything in a gay relationship. I think one time Michael and I were getting a couples massage.
I was going to literally bring that up.
And the one of the massage therapists was like, so who's the boy? Who's the girl? And we're like, okay. So no, I don't think traditional gender roles play, for many people, for us at least, play any part in our relationship, just because they don't.
I think that, you know, we're both very keyed into all aspects of gender and sexuality, just because we're I don't want to say educated in that way, but we do talk with our friends and other artists and pay attention to what's happening in the world of gender and sexuality. And the fact that there is no I don't want to say judgment, because that has a negative connotation, but there's no idea of what we should be or should be with each other. Like, there are nights where we, you know, just talking about stereotypes, there are nights that we will throw on a wig and lip sync to Meadowlark, you know, and like, and
you don't lip sync it, you sing it full out.
Yeah. Okay, fine. In Betty Buckley's key, like, you know, but you know, and do different versions of it, like, you know, and go on a YouTube rabbit hole. But then also, like, other nights we'll go to Yankee Stadium and see a baseball game and, you know, enjoy a baseball game. But it's like, just talking about gender stereotypes, what that means, it's those don't exist in our house. We just really like exploring all different aspects of our personalities and supporting each other.
It's not even a thing. What do you guys think?
I think that, I don't know that there are like, that we're masculine or feminine. I think that there are moments, I guess it has more to do with like domination and submissiveness. Not that those words seem so strong, but, you know, I think that there are things that happen or, I'm not speaking sexually. I'm just speaking like about our general relationship and the way things are done. There are certain tasks that Brett will take the lead on and dominate the situation, and I will follow. As there are things that that I make happen, and I think that because we're able to do both. That is why we are able to be compatible and have,
you know, what's interesting for me, you know, is I feel like there are certain things that I do that I attach to feminine because my mom did them, but not necessarily because they were masculine or feminine. And the same thing, like where I attach certain things that my dad did or things that Steven does, where I will see like things that I attach to male or female because of examples that were set for me, but I don't think they're necessarily masculine or feminine in their nature.
Right.
That's really interesting because like my, you know, again, just using the words that we're talking about in this conversation, the masculine aspects of me or the more dominating aspects of me are because of the women in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was talking with my therapist about this, that the way that I can communicate sometimes is if I'm sitting at a table surrounded by Jewish women all trying to get their stories across, speaking in Yiddish, yelling at each other because they can't hear each other. And that is how I communicate sometimes. I'll be like, no, put the plate on the table and walk away. It's fine. It's fine. and it's not in a negative way at all. It isn't it does come off as dominating, and I'm not mad, I'm not upset, I'm not pissed off. It's just the way of communication that I have surrounded myself with since I'm very little, since I'm born, and that's just how I communicate sometimes.
But it is interesting to think like where what makes it masculine and feminine, because I think everyone has that. Even women have the masculine side and men have a feminine side. And so, you know, I think it's not necessarily, it's again, but you guys were talking about attaching a gender to it almost. Right. And I think that there's no gender to masculine and feminine. It's just everyone has capabilities of both.
Totally. Yeah. Well, and that's why, you know, this is such, despite some terrible politics going on right now, this is a very, you know, especially the past like decade, a very exciting time for the LGBTQIA community. And, you know, people who are non-binary are coming to the forefront, and people are, this might be a new word for many people who, you know, and for me, even it was when I was, one of my friends came out as non-binary and a couple years ago, and I learned what that meant, and you know, people are learning what that means for people who do have kind of both genders. They're fluid, you know. It's very fascinating.
And I keep a safe space. I keep a safe space in the studio, and I don't, you know, what happens in the studio with a client. I keep that, you know, within the four walls. But you know, I have a lot of clients that are gender non-conforming, non-binary, and me personally learning how to communicate gender and how someone sees themselves without making it a spectacle or without making it about the whole shoot has been really interesting, to really go on a journey about communication and about understanding something that's so new. And the gay relationship is also, in the grand scheme of things, very new. You know, you know, there's tradition with heterosexual marriages, and we, since we're so new, we're figuring it out. And you know, Remy and I do think we have boundaries in our relationship that are that others see as a shunda, which is Yiddish for like a shock or like a curse or something like that. Like people say, we don't know how you could do that. Like we have an open aspect to our relationship, and
sorry mom
but like, you know, but also that for me relieves the, you know, I guess like a primal instinct to cheat or stray or something. We gave ourselves that permission. We're also not only are we boyfriends, but we're also best friends, and we have conversations of what we like and what we can give each other and what we can't give each other. So, and that's, I mean, we're 6 years strong and we love each other more and more every day. So, I mean, the modern relationship seems to be just as special or important or works just as well as the traditional relationship.
We have to start winding down, but tell people where they can find you.
I'm so glad I know, we're wrapping up, because again, we could have talked for hours about their
disagreements. No, this was an awesome episode. Yeah. You know, I was so glad to have you guys on Broadway Bickering. I mean, Broadway Husbands. No, but seriously, Michael has an awesome podcast that's new to the Broadway Podcast Network called...
Yeah, it's called Dear Multi-Hyphenate, and it's about artists in the industry who have multiple proficiencies that cross-pollinate to help flourish professional capabilities.
Nice.
So what does that mean? It means I do a lot of shit, and you probably do too. Let's talk about it.
Yeah. And you guys are both on Instagram, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's my name. So it's at Remy Germanario. If you can't spell it, think of like a German aria, like a song, but it's Ario.
But okay.
We'll put your links in the show notes. And Michael, what's yours?
And I'm at the Michael Kushner, or at the Dressing Room Project, or at Dear Multi-Hyphenate, all of those on Instagram. That's pretty much where I'm the most active.
He's even a multi-hyphenate on Instagram.
I know. I got three Fakakta accounts I have to manage now.
Yeah. I'm the same.
I don't know which one to write you on. When I mean, I could text you, but I just, you know, it's funny. It's like, ugh, God, sometimes I'm messaging from my puppy's account, and now I'm helping my mom out with her account. So it's like five accounts right there that I'm just like, which one am I signed into?
Well, we're so glad you guys came on. It's such a great conversation. Really, really enlightening. And we can't wait to talk to you guys more.
And see you in person.
Yeah, that would be
awesome. We'll have a double date.
Thank you guys. And to all of our listeners, don't forget to
love who you love
and love what you do.
Oh, yes.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.